from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. We're kicking off the new year with a visit from Justin Wade of the Young Actors Theater, which has just a few shows going on this weekend.
I'll chat with art educator and curator Ian Fraser about his new memoir, A Sow's Ear.
And I'll talk with a magician who's performing in this year's Indie Winter Magic Fest. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Justin Wade runs the Young Actors Theater with help from his sister Catherine out of the historic Athenaeum. This theater program for kids works with over 1,000 kids annually in providing classes and putting on performances. Over the next two weekends, they'll be staging two versions of Cinderella, plus Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, and Rumpelstiltskin. Travis DiNicola spoke with Justin about the program.
Justin, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
It's always great to see you, and thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad you made it through the crazy weather we've been having.
Snowpocalypse.
So, speaking of kind of crazy, you have four shows opening this
weekend?
Five. Let me see if I got all this. Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Rumpelstiltskin, and...
And another Cinderella.
Man, yeah, that's great.
These shows are kindergarten through 12th graders, which is what YT is all about, self-empowerment through theater. You know, our mission is to instill confidence, creativity, and discipline in Indianapolis youth through the art of theater. And these are the end result of our fall session.
Yeah.
So we've got, like... three of the shows are kindergarten through seventh graders, and then both Cinderellas, which one is the stepmother story and the other is the stepsister story, are our 8th through 12th grade groups. And all of these plays, we call this the season of the villain, and and each of these plays were written in-house by different staff members from Young Actors Theater.
Okay. And so some fun takes on some traditional fairy tales and stories. And all of these plays are taking place at the Athenaeum, right?
All these plays are taking place at the Athenaeum, which is our home base. You know, we do plays around the city. We do plays at the Indie Fringe building. We're getting ready to do Go Ask Alice, which is a play dedicated to Jake Meyer. One of our students, Carson Meyer, who her brother, Jake Meyer, died of a heroin overdose last year. And Go Ask Alice is actually a fundraiser for Carson's college, who's had some very traumatic experiences in her life. She lost two brothers, actually, in her life. And that's going to be at the Wheeler Building in March in Fountain Square.
Okay.
We've got stuff coming up at the Fringe Building. We do stuff at the downtown library. We also
do stuff with Heron, right?
We actually teach drama classes in Heron High School, and then we work with the Center for Inquiries, too. So we work with some dynamic schools. And, you know, Young Actors Theater is one of the places where, you know, I know in my heart that real education is taking place daily with the stuff that we do. And we're lucky enough to go into some of the schools, too, that where you see real education happening daily, too.
Now, Justin, I know you said you work with kids, you know, K through 18. But, I mean, that's still a pretty big jump from, you know, Cinderella to Go Ask Alice to dealing with, you know, the needs of 5- and 6-year-olds to dealing with, you know, a fundraiser for someone whose brother had a heroin overdose. I mean, that's you guys cover quite a lot of territory.
Oh, yes. And we're all about, like, you know, we're all about self, like I said, self-empowerment through theater. And, you know, Young Actors Theater is it's a special place for everybody who's involved. And we do the whole gamut on purpose. We do a lot of social issues plays. We do a lot of plays that show what teenagers are really dealing with in their day-to-day lives. And then we also do a lot of fairy tales. So you get the whole gamut at Young Actors Theater. I feel like everything that we're doing, I see the effect in the kids, you know, and I always feel like a self-empowered person in my own life, and it comes from loving what I do every day. And I feel like, you know, everything around us is a labor of love. If you're interested in coming to see any of our shows,
yeah, absolutely.
I say it's the best thing to see for people who maybe are interested in getting their kids involved in a theater program. Young Actors Theater is unique in the sense that if your kid isn't, we don't work with kids just on making it and acting. And a lot of our kids who are of the high school age will even tell you, you know, I've done 25 shows with Young Actors Theater and my goal is to own a business. And Young Actors Theater helps me feel empowered within myself. And I've gained self-realization through this program. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use it in business later on. So if you're interested in maybe what's going on at Young Actors Theater for your kid, that'd be one of the perfect reasons to go see these fairy tales that we're getting ready to open up this coming weekend and next. And also, if your kid is in the, like I'd say, the eighth grade or below, it's the absolute perfect thing to bring that age to, because that mm-hmm. age loves sure. seeing other kids
yeah.
their age up on stage. So those are the two main audiences I always go for, is people who are interested in our program, or eighth grade and below, that if you have kids of that age.
Do you guys really work with over 1,000 kids now annually?
We work with over 1,000 kids annually.
That is incredible.
It's going to go up next year too, because and I think that, you know, we've really built ourselves like with a do-it-yourself mentality, in the sense that we've gone, you know, kid to kid. The kids that take our program end up bringing other kids, and it's happened through the years where they felt so strongly about Young Actors Theater and talked about what's happening in the classrooms so much that in turn people from all over the city have come. And you know, our zip code breakdown is less than 1% on every zip code that we have in the program for all those 1,000 kids. So it's kids from literally
really
from
spread
every
out, yeah.
zip code. Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, I know that you and your sister Catherine
yes.
run Young Actors,
yes.
but you must have, I mean, a lot of staff or volunteers, or how does that all
we
work?
We do,
now?
And we've got some staff members who are doing a bunch of stuff, like Georgiana Smith and Michael Burke. Georgiana mm-hmm. Smith is the executive artistic director of No Exit Performance, and Michael Burke is the associate artistic director of No Exit Performance, and they're both deeply involved in our program. Julie Morrow, who's a local actor, is deeply involved in our program. We have a couple of people who are Butler Theater people. Those actually, a couple of those people I just mentioned are Butler Theater grads. But we have, like, I feel like we have the best staff that we've ever had right now. And I feel like we also, I always tell the kids, we're the best at doing this that we have ever been in our lives. Are you the best you've ever been? Because I feel like we truly, over the years, have learned so much about education. We're an education first program. Mm-hmm. And I see myself as an educator before I see myself as anything else. Like, I'm a director, I'm an actor, I'm a teacher, I'm an educator first. I always use the word educator for myself first, because that's what I've spent my life studying and doing. And I feel very strongly about the product that we have to offer.
You guys mainly offer classes in the evenings and weekends? And
we our main stage shows are Saturday classes
yeah.
that from either 9 to 12 or 12:30 to 3:30, then each class has 25 rehearsals for a production.
Mm-hmm.
And we right now at ytkids.org are taking we're doing registration right now for our spring session. Most of our classes usually fill up, so if you're interested, it'd be the perfect thing to come down to these shows, which are on our website at ytkids.org, or look up Young Actors Theater. If you just Google us, Young Actors Theater Indianapolis will come right up, and then hit main stage, and it'll show all the shows that we have coming up, and you'll also see that we are doing sign-ups right now for the spring.
And every kid who signs up for the classes does get to perform in a show, right?
Yeah, we're all about that.
Like, yeah.
And that's one of the things that Young Actors Theater is all about. Everybody mm-hmm. who's involved in anything that we do, it does do a show. We have a bunch of side groups too. Like, we have a new group we started called Urban Compassion, which is a poetry collective.
Yeah.
And we also have a new group called Dauntless, which is a dance team collective. And then we have an anti-bullying project group that meets weekly, that is devising an anti-bullying show that's going to be, actually, we're doing something in Columbus, Indiana, and then something at the Indiana Government Center. So there's a lot of things to get involved in, but the best way to start at Young Actors Theater is to do our main stage classes.
Now, it sounds to me, from what we've talked about before, some of these side projects, I mean, you mentioned the bullying program and some of these other programs, the poetry one, they kind of come out of the needs and requests miss the students, right?
Oh, they really do. The kids
really kind of drive.
That's right. There's this guy called Levi the Poet, and he's like this amazing poet that's like online. You can see all of his stuff, and the kids are obsessed with him, and they can spit his poetry like word for word.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing me Levi the Poet one day, and I was like, well, we need to do something like this. And they were like, yes, let's do it now. And so we started this thing, Urban Compassion. I love Urban Compassion. I think it's going to be a really strong group. And our goal is, before our social issues plays, we're going to have members of the Urban Compassion group performing poetry as people come through the door over the next year.
Great. Very cool. Very cool. Obviously, I mean, you have so much passion for this.
Oh, I'm totally all the time into what I do. And, you know, I talk about it online a lot, just like, you know, and I try to let people know how much, you know, I love what I do, because I think that in turn, you know, our whole program, everybody's really into what we're doing. And I mean,
theater was a big part of your life growing up.
It was a huge part of my life. Yeah. In fact, it saved my life. And I feel like, you know, it was something that I was a hard case when I was a young person. And I made a lot of like, I went through a time where I made poor choices, but the theater was always there as a positive thing in my life. And it's something that, you know, I never set out to be an educator, but I ended up when I was younger working at a bunch of different school systems. And then through the years ended up working every year since I was 18 with kids professionally. And over time, it's been something that drives me more than anything else. Like I always say that if I had $1 million, the only thing I'd do was like build up YAT more, because I would keep doing what I do.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And it's very cool you get to work with your sister, too.
Yeah, well, that's always an interesting thing, working with your sister. No, I think my sister is one of the best educators in this city, actually. And she is a driving force at Young Actors Theater. She teaches passionately. And you know, she's one of those people who's, like, extremely organized. And her shows show that. She just recently had a show called The Witches. It was a Roald Dahl's The Witches, and it was one of the most interesting versions of The Witches I've ever seen. It was at the Fringe Building, and it was in Theater in the Round. We've been doing Theater in the Round for the last year, actually. We did a Euripides Medea Theater in the Round that took place in 4 different time zones at Heron High School recently. And we just keep doing this Theater in the Round thing. We've done, like, I think 6 different productions that are Theater in the Round, and we're going to keep going for the next year. Like Go Ask Alice is going to be Theater in the Round. We have a play coming up called The Twits that's going to be Theater in the Round. It's something that I feel like the kids really like, and having the audience really up close, it does good for the actor.
Sure.
And it's a totally different like experience like with the Theater in the Round thing, but I love that. Now these main stage shows though are in the Athenaeum.
They're
stage,
at the Athenaeum Theater. Let me ask you this: which is the show out of the 5 this weekend that features the oldest kids?
The oldest kids is Cinderella, which is the stepmother story.
The Cinderella stepmother version.
And then the stepsister story, both Cinderellas are the 8th through 12th graders.
Okay, very good.
And then the others are Rumpelstiltskin, his story, and then Sleeping Beauty, the evil fairy story, and then Snow White, the queen story. So it's all taken from the villain's perspective.
Yes. Very fun. Yes. Justin, it sounds like it's a great weekend. I know the next 2 weekends you guys will be awfully busy. Your kids will be busy. Let's hope for some better weather so we can get everyone to the theater, right?
Hey, thank you, Travis. And I'm going to tell you something. Our kids want to send a huge shout out to Indy Reads. We really appreciate everything you guys are doing over there. We love being on Mass Ave, and there's so many great things on Mass Ave, which is another great reason to come to these shows, is to come see everything that's going on at Mass Ave. But our kids practically live over there at Indy Reads, so great job with that, man.
Awesome. Thanks, Justin. We'll talk soon.
Travis DiNicola with Justin Wade of the Young Actors Theater. You can find out more about YAT and a complete schedule of their upcoming shows this weekend and next at yatkids.org, yatkids.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Ian Frazier was born in Ghana and educated in Jamaica and England, but he emigrated with his partner Ambrose Smith to America in the 1950s. He subsequently taught in public schools and later at the Heron School of Art. He was curator of the Clues Collection at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Though Ian and Ambrose retired to Florida a few years ago, Ian has made their Indianapolis years spring to life in Technicolor with his new memoir called A Sow's Ear, Digressions and Transgressions of a Gay Humanist. Sharon Gamble spoke with Ian about the book by phone, and he began by reading a passage about an unpromising arrival in Indianapolis during a heat wave.
Soon it was time to head for our new life in Indianapolis. We traveled there by train, leaving Grand Central one afternoon to alight at Union Station around 11 a.m. on July the 30th, 1957. Mrs. Baer, who had promised to meet us, was not there. Following a phone call, we took a cab to their house on Four Creek Parkway, where she awaited us. A good-looking woman of 57, it soon became obvious who wore the pants in that childless home. We were instructed to put all of our luggage on the front porch. Included were 8 heavy cases of shellac gramophone records. They were soon rendered unplayable as a result of the blazing sun. From a tropical outfitter in London, we had bought linen suits, which proved no match for the heat and humidity, apart from the downtown department stores of Ayers, Blocks, and Wasson's. Central air conditioning was almost unknown. Very few people even had a window air conditioner. Accepted wisdom was that by day, the house was sealed up with draperies closed to keep out the heat. Then, before going to bed, windows were opened and a powerful extractor fan was turned on in the attic to draw in the moist but marginally cooler night air. Mrs. Baer had booked accommodations for us in the house of a neighbor, but for some reason we were not to be taken there till after dinner that night. Meanwhile, as Mr. Baer was at work in his furniture store, she would take us out to lunch. We could all three fit in the front seat of her car. Our destination turned out to be a drive-in opposite the fairgrounds on 38th Street. It was called Merrill's Heidecker. Mrs. Baer handed the telephone to us to order what we wanted, but the menu might just as well have been written in Chinese, for all the sense it made. Anyway, before long, a young lady came out with a tray of food, which hooked onto the partially raised car window. This was Merrill's first venture into the catering business. Over the years, he was to become one of the biggest players in the state's food industry. As a retiree, he and his wife traveled with me on a trip to Spain, where we found much to reminisce about. That day, Mrs. Baer took us in behind the scenes to see the operation. On account of the heat, the back door was open. Merrill, his white chef's hat yellowed with sweat, was shooing flies off hamburgers as they circled on a conveyor belt awaiting buns. I was glad that we'd eaten, as I could not put cow dung out of my mind. At long last, the time had come to see where Mrs. Baer had arranged for us to sleep. But first it was back to their house to collect the luggage. One look and we realized that whatever had survived the blistering heat had been drenched. We were assigned to the attic of the old Duesenberg mansion on Fall Creek. Our landlady pointed the way up. By the time we had lugged all 17 pieces up the various staircases, we were exhausted. A couple of roll-away cots had been set up among typical attic clutter, but neither the heat nor the roar of the fan could prevent us from sleeping soundly. As the final day of July dawned, we wondered if we'd made a ghastly mistake in leaving Britain. Could Oscar Wilde have been right when he said that the USA was the only country to go from barbarism to decadence without an intervening civilization? Fortunately, we kept our feelings to ourselves, or we might have been on the next train back to New York.
You know, I'm laughing, but it's only funny because I know that you and Ambrose stayed and contributed to the civilizing period in Indianapolis in so very many ways.
Thank you.
So this book, A Sow's Ear, Digressions and Transgressions of a Gay Humanist, I know you were reluctant to write a memoir, though tons of friends, former students, mere acquaintances had been urging you for a long time. And there was kind of a tipping point where someone dear to you sat you down and, I believe, outlined 7 different potential audiences for this book?
Yes, that was Herb Budden. Herb Budden wrote me a letter in February 2012, an email letter. And he carefully thought out all the reasons that he felt there were people who would be interested in it. But I always said, well, you know, apart from a few close friends and relatives, I can't imagine that anyone's interested in my story. After all, I'm a pretty ordinary kind of a guy. And he said, On the contrary, he said there are a lot of people who would be interested. He said art historians are going to be interested, people in the gay community are going to be interested, people who are interested in travel are going to be interested, all the traveling you've done, and people who are interested in the way things were in the old country that you left, because you've lived through so many changing times. And, and various other reasons like that he gave me. In any case, I gave it some careful thought, and as Ambrose at that point was rapidly losing his ability to deal with anything, having all these endless little strokes that were affecting his brain, I thought, well, you know, I need something to take my mind off the problems I've got. So that was it. I did decide to do it.
You have this wonderful device that's not an actual journal, but people have marveled at your amazing memory for things that happened, 50, 60 years ago. Tell us about that little device that you pulled out. It's a book in which you kept track of something.
It's a way book. It's the book that Ambrose and I used all over the years to weigh each other, because we were always having a problem with our weight. And so many, many years ago, we decided that we'd get a blank book and we'd weigh each other every Friday morning.
That's so you couldn't cheat. You would weigh each other.
That's right. Weigh each other and write it down. And then, so the date was there. The weight was there. The weight is really immaterial as far as writing a book is concerned. But the date is always there. So I would head the page 1977 or whatever it was, and with one column would say Ambrose and the other would say Ian, and then when the weights would be put down each Friday, and then if I was away with the students or traveling or doing anything, then Ambrose would write in, he'd weigh himself and write his weight in, and then in my space he'd say Ian in Spain or whatever was the reason I wasn't there. And then sometimes if we were both away, there'd be two or three weeks where there was no weights in. So when we come back, we'd write in both away
back,
in
back
New
from
England.
Italy or whatever, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so that way it could trigger my memory as to which year this, that, and the other had been done. That's all it was, really. That's how I know pretty well which year things happened.
Sure. You interacted with so many colorful characters in your many years in Indianapolis, but I think our listeners might have a particular interest in your relationship to the Clues collection. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You want to know how I got involved with
yes.
the Clues
mm-hmm.
collection?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. I had already become very interested in art paintings and things like that, because I'd been involved with it quite a bit in England even before I ever left. But it was all as a hobby more than anything else. I did not have any degree in art history at that point at all. But I knew a fair amount about artists and paintings and this sort of thing, and had a lot of friends in England who were in the same boat. Among them was Cecil Gould, who was the deputy keeper of the National Gallery in London, and he was also curator of all the Italian paintings. He happened to come to Indianapolis quite early on, a year or so after we had arrived there, because he was giving a series of lectures around the United States, and Indianapolis was about the middle of his trip. So he was naturally going to stay with us, as he was an old friend from London. Well, Mrs. Clues was in the habit of inviting the speakers who were speaking at the Heron Museum just to dinner and that kind of thing before the event occurred. She went to Wilbur Peet, the director of the museum. She said, which hotel is Mr. Gould staying at? Wilbur Peet said, he's not. He's staying with friends. And here's the telephone number. Of course, she'd never heard of Ambrose and me. But at any rate, she phoned up and invited us to dinner before his lecture. But I turned her down because I'd had a letter from Cecil Gould saying that he didn't want to be invited anyway because he was tired. He'd be tired halfway through his trip, and he was sick and tired of all these do-gooding ladies who wanted to entertain him and all the rest of it. So he said, please, for God's sake, don't get me involved in it. So she was pretty put out over this. But I did my best to explain it politely to her and got off the hook with that one. But it was only a few weeks later that another friend of ours, who had been director of the National Museum of Wales, who we also knew, John Steegman from London days, he also was coming to stay with us, and he was giving a lecture on Reynolds. And the Cluses had a rather good Reynolds portrait in their collection. And she phoned up again because she found out from Wilbur Pete that once again he was staying with us. So she called up. She said, I hope Mr. Steegman is not quite as skittish about invitations as your friend Mr. Gould. So I said, not at all. He likes dinner. So that way we did go to dinner with her. And, of course, I didn't know at that point that the IRS was breathing down the back of her neck because Dr. Cluse had just recently died, and she wanted to keep the paintings, which he had left to the Cluse Fund. They weren't actually in her possession. They were physically in her possession, but they had not been left to her. He had set up this charitable organization known as the Cluse Fund and left most of the paintings to that. Well, she didn't want them taken out of the house at all. She wanted just to keep them there the way it had always been there, you see.
Sure.
And the IRS said, well, you can't do that. I mean, you either if you want to break the trust and have them for yourself, then you've got to pay inheritance tax on them, and they have to be properly appraised and all that. Well, that would have been millions of dollars, so she didn't have that kind of spare change around. And what with one thing and another, it was obvious that the house had to be open to the public. And that's why she sent for me then very shortly after John Steegman's visit, invited me over for tea and to discuss that possibility. Would I be in charge and take people around the collection and all that? And so I did. That's how I got slid in through the back door that way.
Sharon Gamble with Ian Fraser, longtime Indianapolis resident, educator, curator, and bon vivant. Fraser's new memoir is called A Sow's Ear, Digressions and Transgressions of a Gay Humanist. It's available at createspace.com, you might want to write this down, 419-7391. Again, createspace.com/419-7391, or just Google A Sow's Ear.
Happy New Year!
Well, maybe
we're reminding you that it's a new year so that you can maybe remind yourself that you made some resolutions.
Yeah, you know, my feeling about this, Sharon, is with the weather the way it's been,
yes,
you know, and stuff. And
we get a restart?
We totally get a restart. So no matter what your resolutions are, and if you broke them already when you were snowed in, you totally get a restart. I think Monday, maybe. Monday's
I can't
a good time.
Tell you how many people I heard say today at work that I was home, I was bored, I just kept eating. And you know, Netflix's server crashed because you can't listen to public radio 24/7.
That's right.
So some people were getting online watching movies. Anyway, we have things you can do to keep your resolution to do new and different art things on that calendar we call.
What will we do?
Well, what do you have? What's
your
suggestion?
If you have not been yet, this is your last chance, literally, for Matisse Life in Color at the IMA.
And someone we know is emceeing a closing party there this weekend.
I just happened to be a part of that.
Yes.
They're doing a big event. Some of it's members only and some of it's open to the public. And
That's Saturday, right?
That's Saturday night. And it's their last call. And you can see the exhibit. And they're going to have a whole bunch of different cool things going on. The public part of it is from 8 until midnight. And if you've not been out to see it, then I would just say, why? Come on out, because it's going to be a great night. But yeah,
see it again.
And see it again if you've, you know, only seen it once and want to see it again. But from 7 to 8, there's going to be sort of a discussion about how the IMA partnered with a lot of different local businesses, including Sun King and Just Pop In and Indie Reads
Take
Books.
And
I'm going to be moderating that discussion, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. Yeah.
While you're there, if you haven't had a chance to see the new design galleries, which
wow,
open on
they
November
are
22nd,
stunning.
Go upstairs from Matisse and check that out. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Some of the furniture, you're like, I don't know how comfortable that would be, but it's certainly stylish.
That, you know, my only complaint with the design galleries, and I really just am so impressed with, I learned so much at the new design galleries.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say my only complaint was I wanted so badly to sit in some of that furniture.
I know, right?
You know, to try it out, right?
But, hey, IMA friends, are you listening? Maybe you can have like the equivalent of a petting zoo for your design gallery.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd
be a great idea. There you go. But I think so. That's a great thing to do. If you haven't been to see Matisse yet, now is the time to do so.
Do not delay.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you're hearing us on Thursday night, listen up. If you're hearing us on Saturday morning, I hope you got a chance to go to this because it's too late now. But if you're hearing us on Thursday night, this Friday, the 10th, is your chance to be a part of an underground movement that's quickly growing. What is that?
What is that?
It's the idea of being unplugged. Leaving your cell phone, your laptop, your netbook,
your... Unplugging yourself.
Whatever. Your iPod, your iPad, leaving those at the door. Where you're going to do this fun activity, it's family friendly. You're going to go to Big Cars Service Center, which in itself is kind of a trip.
Oh, that's a ton of fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's actually the former tire shop. On the west side of Lafayette Square Mall, the exact address is 3819 Lafayette Road. So if you were going there for the first time, you'd go maybe 38th to Lafayette and north on Lafayette Road, and you'll see it on the east side of the street. And Big Car has repurposed that space with community garden. Not a lot going on this time of year there, of course, but they are hosting this unplugged night. Again, it's 6 to 11 this Friday night. It's a by donation event, so it's kind of free will donation. And you can untether yourself from your electronics for as long as you care to. And there are lots and lots of motivations to do so. A chance to play board games, enjoy a big fire in the outdoor pizza oven. You can bring your own, you can bring your own things to cook. They're going to have s'mores, makings, but you can bring other things to cook if you like. There'll be a campground with tent and trees by Brain Twins, collaging with Big Car, and collaborative painting facilitated by Nate, Artrageous with Nate.
Oh, excellent.
Matt, Nate, Nate, mm-hmm. Nathan Heck. Art fun with the Department of Public Words. An old-fashioned letter writing station. Tune up your cursive writing. Indoor soccer, acoustic music.
Right,
that's
unplugged.
Important to point out by Tonos Triad, Hank Haggard, and the Texas Three.
And they are such a great fun
Kip
band.
Kip Norman, Nat Russell, and more. And local craft beer for
sale. Be a great Friday
Not
night.
For your little people, mind you. But there are family-friendly activities. 6 to 11, Big Car Service Center tomorrow night, Friday night.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Hey, something else going on this weekend that might be kind of fun worth checking out at the Indiana State Fair. Grounds. They are having their 38th annual Greater Indianapolis Garage Sale, so it's kind of a free-for-all out there. You can also check out the ice skating at the pavilion out
Yay.
There, which will be a fun thing to do. Sharon, think about some good music. You mentioned Tonos Triad, which I just love that band. A musician, Nico Case, who many people know because she's been on Prairie Home Companion on All Things Considered and a lot of different NPR shows. She's coming to the Vogue Theater on Thursday, January 30th. Nico Case will be doing a show. That sounds like a lot
of
fun.
That's a great place to hear music. Nice, intimate space. Hey, if getting out of town and doing something in nature is on your agenda as something artful to do, Spring Mill State Park Inn is doing some 2-for-1 overnight specials through February 24th. It's a spectacular park. If you've never been, it offers tremendous hiking. The inn is lovely. They have a great chef there, by the way. Nice restaurant, and you'll be visiting the persimmon capital of the world. No persimmons, no fresh persimmons available right now, of course, but that's Mitchell, Indiana. So Spring Mill State Park, nice getaway. Take your camera. There's your artistic outlet for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, if you're looking for something maybe a little bit body, a little bit more adult, you might want to check out the White Rabbit Cabaret down in Fountain Square next week because they are doing their burlesque Bingo Bango show. They're bringing that back. That's right. And if you've never been to the White Rabbit, well, they do a very tasteful burlesque show, but it is definitely an adults only. And they add a bingo element to it, which, of course, makes everything more fun.
Sounds like one of those you need to experience.
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, if you read your Indianapolis Star the day after Christmas, you probably saw a nice, interesting article by Janet Schneider about the end of traditional film, how movie theaters are being forced to go all digital. Well, the Indianapolis Museum of Art is trying to keep old school projected films alive, in part through their Winter Nights film series. Coming up on the 17th, Father Goose, a lot of fun, 1965 film. And then on the 24th, these are Friday nights, by the way, at 7 o'clock. On the 24th, Manhattan, that great Woody Allen film. Yeah, so traditional film indoors at the IMA.
Something you don't want to miss this weekend, Dance Kaleidoscope is kicking off their 2014 season with American Rhapsody, featuring the music of George Gershwin. It is at the Indiana Repertory Theater all weekend long. Great modern dance, worth checking out as well. That's they're performing that at various times throughout the weekend. Check out the Dance Kaleidoscope site to get more information.
Addicted to Plastic is a film, a documentary that is all about solutions to plastic pollution. And it includes, it actually encompasses 3 years of filming in 12 countries on 5 continents, including 2 trips to the middle of the Pacific Ocean to see where plastic debris accumulates. You can see it this Friday night at 7 o'clock. It's part of an interfaith eco film series, and it's going to be screened.
You might scream
after you see this documentary. That's right. It's going to be screened at Cross and Crown Lutheran Church. That's at 79th and Allisonville. The film is free of charge. Free will donations accepted, complimentary snacks and soft drinks. Family friendly. In fact, if you have middle school or older kids, you might want to take them because they're going to be part of solving this plastic addiction. So Addicted to Plastic this Friday night, 79th and Allisonville Road, Cross and Crown Lutheran Church.
Sure, and I know it does seem like the holidays are over and maybe even a distant memory for some, but if you missed it, there is still time through January 19th to see Jingle Rails, the Great Western Adventure. That is the incredible train exhibit that the Idlejork has on exhibit that is up through January 19th. So you still have some time to check out Jingle Rails.
Hey, actually, if you're going to the Idlejork and you want to see Jingle Rails, you might want to go on Saturday, January 18th from 1 to 2 in the afternoon. Because there's a storyteller, a really wonderful storyteller named Tim Tingle, who's going to do a performance called Coyote This and Rabbit That. It is a series of tales about tricksters. Tricksters are people who are either mischievous messengers or menacing enemies. And Tim is an enrolled member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, and his great-great-grandfather walked the Trail of Tears in 1835, and memories of this family epic fuel his writing and storytelling. So you can go see Tim Tingle January 18th, 1 to 2 at the Idlejork, and then go ride the rails vicariously after.
That sounds great. We'll be back with more ideas of things to do new this year on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
It's time for the 4th Annual Winter Magic Festival, created in partnership between the Indie Fringe and Indie Magic Monthly. It runs from the 16th through the 19th, and close-up magic will be featured this year at the Fringe's Basile Theater, and more traditional stage magic will be featured at the Cook Theater at Indiana Landmark Center. Travis DiNicola spoke by phone with magician Kayla Drescher, winner of the Today Show's David Copperfield search for the next great magician.
Kayla, thanks so much for chatting with us on Art of the Matter. It's great to have this opportunity.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, have you been to Indianapolis before?
You know, I have not.
All right. So, first time, and you're coming here for the 4th Indie Winter Magic Fest, which is just really a fun event. I mean, it's really grown over the past couple years. Taylor Martin's done a great job with that. And
yes.
I know he's really excited about all the people he's bringing in. How did you and Taylor get connected?
Well, I've known Taylor for a very long time. We met at a magic convention back when I was maybe 15 or 16 years old. And so I see Taylor about once or twice every year, and we've kind of been in contact about me coming out to Indy, and it finally worked out for both of us, and I'm super excited to get to see him and to come to the show.
That's excellent. And I know he was really excited about getting you out here because, among other things, you, about a year ago, I guess it was, won the competition that the Today Show was doing with David Copperfield, the next great magician. Yeah. Tell me a bit about that.
Sure. So basically, it was a competition that David and the Today Show hosted, and you could send in a video of some of your own original magic, and I was lucky enough to be one of three finalists to be brought and perform live on the Today Show, live on the air, which was amazing, and got to meet David and the other two contestants, which was wonderful, and got to perform on the Today Show, and it was great, and part of the prize was to go and see David's show out in Las Vegas and get a tour of his museum, and it was truly amazing, and his show is easily one of the best I've ever seen, and I've seen it before, but it continues to grow and get better and better, and his museum is just about 2 or 3 hours of just walking through of magic history and ventriloquist history and just theater history in general, and it's absolutely amazing, so I was very lucky to be a part of that.
That is so cool. I mean, congratulations on that. I'm also, you know, a big fan of David Copperfield and seen his show a couple times, and I've, you know, heard stories about this museum that he has, but that's something that most people don't get a chance to see.
Yeah, and when he announced that that was the prize, that was the first time I had heard of that being the prize as well, and you could, you know, I just got even more and more excited about the possibility of going to see it, and I tell you, it was not a disappointment. It was absolutely wonderful, and we had a great time.
I've heard it's like the size of like football fields, right, or something, just like
gigantic.
Yeah,
multiple floors and just giant warehouse-sized rooms, and then some of the rooms are even decorated. And my goodness, it's absolutely beautiful.
How cool! Well, the video that's on YouTube of you winning that on the Today Show has you doing a great close-up, sort of like a routine similar to a coin change routine, except you're using bottle caps from beer, and because you're a bartender, right? Or do you still do that?
Yeah. So that's basically where the routine came from. Is that I happened to be behind the bar one day and was. Normally, you know, as every day goes, opening the beers, a bottle or the bottle of beers, and handing them to people. And one day, I picked up the cap, and as I would normally do, throw them in the trash. I kind of held it in my hand and realized that it just had these really cool properties that I hadn't explored before. And as I'm staring at this bottle cap, of course, the man behind the bar is, "Give me my beer." so I have to, you know, I had to. Tell him to hold on a minute because that was going to be a very important moment. But luckily enough, he understood, and that's basically where it came from. So yeah, it's a little bit of coin work mixed with some bottle caps, and I perform it all the time at the bar, and people love it.
I bet they do. I mean, that's such a cool thing. Anytime you can use, you know, common, normal, you know, objects that people are comfortable with, always seems to make a big difference for a lot of audiences.
I agree, and I try to do that in most of the magic I do.
Do you do other tricks at the bar or other tricks that involve barkeeping or beverages of such?
I do. So as a bartender, I'm often asked to perform magic from behind the bar, so I'm often doing things with the objects that are right in front of me. I don't necessarily have the option of bringing in decks of cards and various other things that don't sit behind the bar. There's limited room anyway, so I'm mostly doing things with wine glasses, and if I can wear a rubber band on my wrist, the bottle caps, beer bottles, really anything from behind the bar. So it's gotten to spark my creativity a little bit, and it's been really fun to develop just basically from behind that bar.
And you live in Boston, is that correct?
I do, yes.
And so then that's the you work at a bar in Boston? How fun.
Correct, yeah.
Very cool. So when you come to Indianapolis for your show here, you'll be doing some of that? Will you be also doing more stage stuff, or will it all be pretty much up-close work?
So it's mostly going to be more of a parlor stage setting. It won't be so much of close-up magic due to the audience size. So it's going to be my stand-up show, which unfortunately doesn't have a ton of bar magic, but you're going to see some different stuff that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, like what? What can you share with us?
Sure. So one of the things that I really love doing is giving the opportunity for people from the audience to actually try some magic themselves. So the show isn't just necessarily me with a deck of cards doing magic. Everyone from the audience will get an opportunity to try to do a little bit of magic themselves and actually come up on stage and almost be the center of attention. And I'm really excited about that path of the show, and it's very fun.
Very cool. Now, I'm curious. I mean, you, as a little girl, you fell in love with magic. What sort of got this started for you?
Sure. So I was 7 years old, and we were looking for something to do for my second grade talent show, and it just so happened that my father and I wandered into a magic shop one day, and I just absolutely fell in love and performed in my school talent show and kind of went full force ever since. I met my mentor, Bill Andrews, and from Connecticut, which is where I grew up, and we just kind of took me under his wing and really started getting me really great performances all over the place, and I fell in love so fast, and I've been in love with it ever since.
You know, I couldn't help but notice when David Copperfield chose you as the winner for the Next Great Magician contest, you know, he said, you know, yes, you're a great magician, but how cool was it also that you're a woman too? Because, you know, traditionally in magic, there are less women who are featured as the main performers.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely part of our community that it is kind of a guy's world, and there are very few female magicians, although there's probably more than you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that are out there, and I'm so inspired by ones like Del O'Dell and Arian Black and Joan DeCore and Juliana Chen, and there are some really great female magicians out there, and I'm really very lucky to be a part of that group.
That's very cool. Incorporate that any way into your routine, being a female magician, or does it really matter at all when you're performing?
So it sometimes does matter, it sometimes doesn't. It's definitely something that, because the audience is not used to seeing a female magician, it's something that you want to make evident and almost address it in a way, and it's definitely important, but it's not something that I try to flaunt. I would much rather be considered a great magician as opposed to a great female magician.
Sure.
So it's not something that I try to, it's not a selling point. It's not, I'm not saying you should hire me because I'm a female. I'd rather you hire me because I'm good. So there is a really good balance there between the women's side and the good magician side.
So for you as a magician, is there a particular trick that maybe you haven't done yet that you would love to do and incorporate into your own show?
Ooh, that's a wonderful question. I mean, I guess I would love to. I haven't really dabbled too much in the full stage illusion.
You haven't, like, sawed yourself in half yet or anything?
You know, I've only done a few. Like, I have done a saw in half. I've done a few others. I've had minimal experience. I'd love to, I guess, explore that a little bit more. I'm not sure how dedicated I would become to having 12-hour setups for every show and lighting things on fire all of the time. I love being able to pack my show into a suitcase and head on a plane, you know. But I think that would be a really cool experience, is to be able to do that.
So when you said 12-hour setups, is that something that you saw with David Copperfield?
No, I have a wonderful friend in the Boston area who's one of the world's premier illusionist, and she happens to also be a female magician. Her name is Lynn Dillies, and she's absolutely wonderful. And her show takes almost 12 hours to set up. And
wow.
her assistant, they pack the truck and they drive it and they set up everything and they break down. And they're absolutely, I mean, they work so hard at that show, and it's so wonderful that it's totally worth the setup. Ian and I admire all of the work she does with it. I'm not sure if that's the world for me, though.
Yeah, sure. That's pretty amazing, though.
You know, it absolutely is.
So, you know, I do have to ask, when you were out there visiting with David Copperfield, did you, you know, in addition to seeing the show and the museum, did he give you any insight in how he does some of his tricks? Not that you could share that with us, but...
You know, it's not so much about insight, but we did get to... We chatted about a few things in some downtime, and he's really a wonderful guy that I got to know a little bit, which was great. But I do say he gave me a really great piece of advice, and he basically said that to be good, to be a good magician, you just have to find what you love outside of magic. So for him, it's movies and music and things like that, and he really just stressed to find who you are and go with that, and that's going to make you a great magician. And I've kind of taken that to heart and have been thinking about it ever since.
Well, I know that you have degrees in both theater and in science?
Yes.
So is that something, I mean, obviously the theatrical part of it is something that is a big part of your routine. But tell me a little bit about more, I mean, how, you know, those things that you love, have you've incorporated into your show?
Sure. So I've always been really passionate about music. I've been mm-hmm. playing instruments basically since I could walk and talk. You know, about 3 or 4 years old, I started on piano lessons and with dance classes and things. So I've always been involved in a lot of different performing arts. But music was a huge part of my life for a very long time. And through high school and through circumstances that led me to basically sit down and practice so many different instruments, I ended up learning about 15 instruments in my
wow.
in my time. So I'm really proud of that, and I still love to play on occasion. So I like to sometimes incorporate that with the magic, which is great. Dance as well. And mm-hmm. besides that, like you mentioned, I do have a degree in science education, and I actually studied green energy and environmental studies, and I've been working with animals, you know, in animal care situations at museums and wildlife centers, and talking about green energy with different ways to, you know, kind of save the earth. So I love researching that and keeping up to date with all the scientific fields, and that was kind of my backup. Is I would not mind at all being a science teacher for the rest of my life, but it was a really great backup, and I'm really happy to have that degree and have the experiences I have.
That's very, very cool. Wow, what a neat variety of things that you know sort of inform your work and what you do. Kayla, yeah. What a great pleasure it's been to chat with you. I'm really looking forward to seeing your show when you come to Indy.
Thank you so much, and I'm very looking forward to coming out and getting to explore the wonderful city, and hopefully it doesn't shut down due to weather.
Yeah.
That would be great.
We should be shoveled out by the time you get here. But
wonderful.
Yeah. We'll try. If not, maybe you can come and make the snow disappear, right?
Perfect. I'll work on that. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kayla. And we'll see you when you come to the show. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Travis DiNicola with magician Kayla Drescher. She'll be performing at the 4th Annual Winter Magic Festival, and she promises to make the snow disappear. The festival runs from the 16th through the 19th at the Indy Fringe and at Indiana Landmarks. For the complete schedule, visit IndyFringe.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I chat with memoirist Van Kirby about his new book.
I'll find out about a new initiative called the Integrated Exhibit Alliance.
And then I'll talk with a man who's planning on reading 26 books this year and wants as many people to join him as possible. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.